2%.
The 2%'s right over here.
Oh, hey, Jenna. I didn't know you shopped here.
Yeah. Anything to support local food. Know what I mean?
I definitely do. Though that's not the only thing you do in the name of Good Eats, obviously.
Well, true. I also host Eating Matters every Wednesday at 5 p.m., where we talk about food policy and how it impacts all of us. Be sure to tune in.
All right, gotta get the plug in there. I get it.
Yep, I'm hashtag shameless.
You know what else you can do to support the local food community, right?
Well, yeah. Make a donation to Heritage Radio Network, the world's pioneer food radio station.
That's right. And I gotta call you out on the whole local thing.
What do you mean?
Well, The Farm Report, A Taste of the Past, Japan Eats. Those are shows that take you around the country and the world.
I'll give you that. So how can listeners give their support?
It's pretty easy. Just go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the big red heart in the top right corner. It's pretty easy from there.
Thanks.
Today's program has been brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. Made with a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. For more information, visit www.rt11.com.
I am Patrick Martins, host of The Main Course. You are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Thank you. Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes, coming to you live from Pasadena, California, which has a lot better food than I gave it credit for when I started coming out here. Actually, one of the best ramen places in the whole city.
Yes, ramen, right up the street.
Ramen Tatsunoya.
Exactly. Did you go?
I did go. A while ago, I had a meeting out here and I left an hour early to go eat there. It's fantastic.
You can hit 85 degrees for sweets on the way out today.
Oh, yeah.
And then you'll have hit the block.
The block.
At least this block.
Yes, I'll hit the block. It's great, but we're with Shauna Dawson, founder of the LA Food Fest, lifelong Angeleno, a.k.a. Rare Unicorn.
Yes.
Is it, being a lifelong Angeleno, like, can people tell? Because, you know, when I lived in New York, I would meet people from New York and be like, you are a lifelong New York. You could just tell about their disposition and the way they live their life.
I will say this. As often as I get pegged for a native Angeleno, I get pegged for a native New Yorker.
Interesting.
I don't know what that says about me, but I will say, for me in this city, I run across so many other native Angelenos who are doing interesting and creative things. So I feel like anytime there's something really cool that I happen to fall into or become connected with, anytime I get to the top of whose mind this came out of, they're natives. I think that we're just passionate about our town and want to do cool stuff here.
I mean, the fact that you have a food festival and other endeavors that's focused on supporting LA food and Angelenos themselves, do you think that there is some ingrained ownership of the city or something that you actually owe to the city of being like giving back? I mean, you know, you talk about a lot of your interviews before and your importance comes down to community and adding back into that.
Absolutely. I wouldn't say that I feel like I owe the city anything. Interestingly enough, I don't. Sorry, LA.
You get my taxes.
I don't know you.
But, yeah.
But I love my city.
Sure.
And that's it. I really, truly love my city. I think anytime you read the gripe lists of all the things wrong with LA, there are many things wrong with LA, like any other urban center.
Absolutely.
Right? But when it comes down to it, there's no other place I would rather live. And I've lived in a few other places, and I always want to come home.
I mean, coming home is one of the best feelings.
Right?
Don't you love it when you're like on this amazing trip and then you're like, you know what's going to be awesome when I come home?
That's right.
So you've been here your entire life. And when did you start working in the festival space? When was your first endeavor into being like, I'm going to put my hat in the ring and put all my blood and all my sweat and get a bunch of people together?
So that would be now almost 8 years ago.
Okay.
Actually fully 8 years ago, if I really think about it. I'd been doing events in different capacities as a marketing person for a really long time. But when I left my last real full-time gig as a marketing director, I left with this idea that I wanted to do this street food festival.
Awesome.
And decided I was going to do it and enlisted the help of a friend and went out and made it happen.
I mean, 2008, right? Or 2000, is that my math? 8 years ago?
Yes.
2008 was when you really nationally started to see a shift in the prominence of LA food. Not saying it didn't exist before, but really LA was saying, like, we are a cultural standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely.
And how did that, was that the big shift, or did you always be like Los Angeles food and this surrounding areas, like, that is the cuisine that I love?
I'll tell you what, if you want to talk about the history of this event and that and how this started.
Yeah.
It was much more locally focused.
Oh, okay.
Because truly, the epicenter of all this for me was here and what was happening here, specifically with the food scene. You know, 8 years ago, I at the time, you know, again, like I said, I had a marketing director gig that took me out into the food world.
Sure.
I worked in the food world. So in that capacity, I was out seeing what was happening, what was new. And this is just at the time that pop-ups were burgeoning.
Oh,
that
yeah.
The Nouveau food truck was burgeoning versus the loncheras and loncheros that I grew up with. So it was just a very curious time with all these things happening, and I didn't understand why no one was bringing some of those elements together in one event, and that's where this was born.
Now, when you say bringing it together, you know, was that because physically that they were just so spread out? Because, you know, in many ways, like, you're in different pockets. You can never eat. You could be the biggest foodie in LA and rarely make it out to Santa Monica or things like that. And it was your whole idea to, like, I'm going to be the one to bring it together.
It was a piece of that, but it was also a piece of corralling all these food trucks, right? Because at the time, everyone was just on Twitter,
Sure.
We had no Instagram. Can you imagine a time before Instagram?
I have nightmares about that before the gram.
No Snapchat?
No Snapchat.
So we, you know, you would go on Twitter and kind of see where these trucks were. And again, you could follow those guys, but it didn't speak to the old school, the really great taco trucks. Like where I grew up here was on the east side in Highland Park, in Eagle Rock, Mount Washington. I went to Eagle Rock Elementary School.
Shout out Eagle Rock.
Right? Eagle Rock. And the things that I grew up with that were really phenomenal, no one was talking about. Nobody was eating that stuff. And I think now, fast forward, there are a lot of people doing that, especially in the journalistic sphere, and it's phenomenal. But from an event perspective and getting it out into the community in front of people, that union of LA's kind of, you know, taco truck culture versus more gourmet, even though street food has always inspired LA cuisine, those two things were not directly intersecting in an event, and that was the idea.
I mean, I think it's tough with any giant urban city about these truly unique, unbelievable ethnic pockets that sometimes get overshadowed by the more media savvy, new and sexy in that cycle of like Instagram and food blogs.
Absolutely.
That, you know, it's like going to the person who's been there for 30 years is not, when you open up Eater or anything like that, you go like, oh, where am I going to go eat? It's very rare that you see those people. They might get a shout out, but not at the top of the list.
No, they're not. And this is what I come down to often calling kind of the PR phenomena. And if you don't have a publicist, you're often not going to land into the sphere of food events that most of these guys land it in, you know, not only because you don't have PR, but because you probably don't have a marketing budget to do it.
No, of course. I mean,
right?
Going out
to
these festivals, it costs money.
That's right.
So what did the first iteration of LA Food Fest look like? How many people, would you say?
The first, okay.
And can you say success?
Let me take you back. It was successful, absolutely. When you have time to bring that many people out, it's a success. But wow, we were too successful. That was the problem with
too many people?
Yes. Our very first event, we planned for 5,000 people. The city didn't really think that we would pull 5,000 people downtown on a weekend the first month in, you know, 2010, which is when we finally did this. And kind of looked at us like we're crazy, like we had three eyes. Like, you're going to get 5,000 people on Saturday downtown? Like, no, you're not. And so we had no city support. I was asking for traffic control for this, for that, and they were like, no, you're not getting 5,000 people.
Did you have it all documented so when they came back to
you? Of course we did.
There
it was the best. It was the best when we were staring down a line of more than 20,000 people.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious. That we had no idea we're going to show up. Within 15 minutes, we were at capacity for the day. There was no way. We had all these people to turn away. My husband was, you know, with walking up and down a mile-long line, literally, with a bullhorn and bottles of water and Pop Chips because they were a sponsor, you know, still getting some love, Pop Chips.
Go Pop Chips.
Go Pop Chips. Handing these things out saying, you know, there's no possible reality where you're getting in here, so please go. We love you for coming, but please go. And it was insane, but that's when we knew we needed to switch up the model.
What was the original model?
It was a free-for-all. It was come in, very low admission price, and pay as you go.
That does not
bode well.
That does not bode well. And it's, I love the public, and I love doing events. It's what I do. But there's something about when people have a low entry point for something with food, the expectations run high?
Yes.
Can I say that delicately?
Yes, they do. Well, in this case, I think the expectations ran nowhere because people didn't even fully understand what we're doing. They just knew they wanted to be there. The admission for that very first event was $5 just to get in the door.
Okay.
We gave a buck of it to charity.
Fantastic.
And that buck to charity got you a beer, which most people didn't even realize. That $5 was admission and a free beer.
Mm.
It was bananas. And I was looking through the sea of people, and there were random celebrities. I'll never forget, there were a couple of cast members from SNL trying to come in. I was like, I won't take your money, but if you want to come see what this is, come in. But like, people have waited now for 2 hours for food. Please go eat somewhere else downtown and come see us another time. At the time, a couple of restaurateurs who were friends of mine downtown, one of whom I went on to work with, he told me, he was like, we had the best day and we're all wondering what was going on because every place downtown was packed.
Oh, isn't that awesome? See, community right there.
Community.
Your under-planning was there over success.
Well, hey, no, we planned.
No, you planned.
We planned. We planned as best as one can, but
no,
you
of
can't.
Course.
When you're talking about that many people and you've planned for a quarter of that,
there's just nothing you can do.
You're in an impossible place. But we knew, great, there's people.
There's a desire.
Absolutely. Angelinos want to do this. They want to see it. You've used that word community. I like to use that word community because I think that there is a desire for us to, you know, for Angelenos, now we have some public transportation that may be starting to change things for another generation. But for people my age and even people 10, 15 years younger than me, we rarely get out of our cars, right?
Sure.
We just don't, because even if you can get on the metro now, it will take too long and you've got things to do. And so these types of events to me do so much more because they serve an, you know, a real need for us to connect with one another.
Yeah.
And get out. And if you ever ask me what my favorite thing is about this event, that very first one and what we do now, I will always tell you it is the people who come. Because people always ask me, what's your demographic? Who comes to these events? What does it look like? It looks like LA. It is a cross-section of the city.
Isn't that awesome?
Yep, and that is the unifying force of food. And that's why I love what we do.
Awesome. Well, listen, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to talk about this year's LA Food Fest and some of the awesome things that you're doing, including pricing structure, which I actually am really, really excited about, which might be the nerdiest, like, insider event thing to be like, oh, your pricing structure is fantastic.
I'm so excited because a lot of time was spent on that.
I love it. And then some of the other different events, and then also your work with Mexico and bringing in chefs from Guadalajara and Mexico City.
Great.
This is Freelance Whales, recorded live on Snacky Tunes. Fun fact, they were the band that made us realize that we were going to do nothing but live bands for the rest of our lives here on Snacky Tunes. One of my favorite songs, Freelance Whales. We are here with Shauna Dawson, founder of LA Food Fest, fellow eventor. It's like an entrepreneur event thing. And you are 5 days out from the launch of this year.
The insanity.
How do you feel the week before an event?
Excited.
Yeah.
And anxious.
Yeah.
You know, I say this always, no matter how many times I do these events, no matter how many times we face every adversity you can imagine and still have a successful event. And, you know, as you know, your attendees never know about all that stuff and what's happening behind the scenes
never
and
know.
Things are spinning out of control. And, you know, if you put on a great show, that's all people see and that's great. But no matter how many times I do this and I should feel have some level of confidence after that, I always find myself feeling like the 7-year-old with the birthday cake and the party and like, oh my gosh, no one's coming to my party and I'm going to have to eat this whole cake.
And then people come and then you go like, oh shit, I should have brought 2 cakes.
That's right. Exactly. And then the cake is gone and I'm like, just like you said, oh my gosh, I need more cake.
So one of the things that I've seen in a trend a lot of food festivals is sort of this homogenization of food festivals where it doesn't even matter what town you're in, but it's like the same chefs and like this circuit. But LA Food Fest is very unique to what it is. And so what was the philosophy or the thesis in building this up and making it now in your 8th iteration of this something that's special that would drive people to go here?
I love that you said that. I actually had an interview with Neil over at the Fork Reporter, KFI. And before we went on air, he made a comment to me where he said, you know, I think everybody thinks that they can just throw up a bunch of white 10x10s and bring in food vendors and call it a food festival.
No.
And that really struck me because it's exactly what we set out not to do in this new iteration. The goal was to create an experience. So it's pulling all the elements that have really been successful for us in the past, not just from a fan favorite perspective, and all of those things will be there, but also that component of diversity, right? Of making sure that as much as we're doing things for our attendees, we're doing as much for our vendors so that we can help support and facilitate the participation of people who otherwise you don't see at these events because
sure.
It's really tough for them to do them financially. So, you know, we've structured a very kind of creative model to with a few different options, both again for the attendee and for the vendor, so that we can kind of maintain that diversity and really represent the entire breadth of LA's food culture and not just one piece of it that you'd see at what I would call the Lexus marquee food event, the $150 plus food event, or that you would just see at the, you know, night market style event or the low cheap entry event.
Sure.
Right?
So with this balance, what have you found that is a different type of experience? What is something a little bit more tangible that you haven't seen at other food events?
Well, for starters, we've done a 3-in-1. So we were like, let's look at this and create an experience that allows the attendee to choose their own adventure and spend what they can spend while also affording them the same experience level and the same level of, truly, it's experience. There's no other word for it that you would get if you were spending that $150 plus price point.
Right.
So, for example, when you come into our event, there are no lounges or areas that are exclusively VIP, which even we have done in the past.
Yeah.
We've eliminated that. So even if you come in for the market experience, which is pay as you go, and we did have $10 tickets, those sold out, but the tickets are now $15 online, 20 at the door. But if you come in for that, that ticket price includes the experience.
Sure.
So it's all the entertainment. It's a bunch of lounges. It's a bunch of themed areas. We wanted it to really, you know, be a great day out with more to do than just eat, and certainly things to do while you eat.
So who are you excited that's coming? And is anyone doing something special? Because I always love it when people don't just bring the, like, oh, I could get this at the restaurant, which I think is sometimes another poor trapping of other, you know, just throw up the white tent.
Yeah.
Like, we, you know, always challenging the chefs to be like,
I agree.
And something unique, which they can't always do.
That's right, exactly. And I was going to say, so to be fair, most of them fall into that for a reason.
And
it's typically an economic reason.
And I'm not begrudging any of them, but sometimes the good secret is that after a food fest, if you go on a Saturday night, you can get the special.
That's right.
For whatever it is.
So I'll tell you, for all of our vendors, there are a few universals. One, everyone is doing 3 items.
Okay.
Everyone will have a $5 item.
Okay.
And everyone is doing an off-menu special.
Those are three very good rules.
Right?
So what are some examples of the $5 items and the off-menu items?
Ooh, oh my gosh. I'm going to be on the spot. There's so many. I feel like I have a giant stew of vendors and menus sloshing around in my head. Cool. Let me think of who's... And to be frank, I haven't seen a lot of the menus yet.
That's fair.
As I'm no longer a one-woman show.
Oh,
but
yes.
I can talk about some of the vendors.
Let's talk about some of the vendors then.
Do you want to talk about specific... Well, I'm trying to think if I want to go into categories. We have a number of different areas we're going to have phenomenal vendors. So we have the Ice Cream Social coming back.
Love it.
Me too. So that's not just... ice cream, even though there's awesome ice cream, Salt and Straw, McConnell's, Jenny's, but we also have, actually, you'll appreciate, Mikey Likes It Ice Cream coming in from Brooklyn.
Shout out to Brooklyn.
Yep, first time in LA.
Really?
And they're doing something in partnership with Mary Jane Media, Snoop Dogg's. I'm doing a visual, a hand signal for all of you listening.
A
hand sign for Snoop Dogg's
media company.
Are they
doing some sort of hemp ice cream, I would assume?
They are indeed doing a hemp ice cream.
Well, that's cool.
Which I'm pretty stoked with.
That's really cool.
We have in there a number of confections, fun churros, Cloud Food Confections, who make all of the crazy shapes of cotton candy. So if you really want a poop emoji cotton candy, they can totally make that happen for you.
Interesting.
Yes.
Okay.
So that's in the sweets. If we move into savory, we have a lot of favorites like Petty Cash Taqueria, who's a favorite. Leaning into the taco realm, All Flavor No Grease out of Watts, who we love. Soul Food, Comfort LA. And now we're going to talk about some of our little guys who I love. And by the way, I'm kind of looking into the space because I'm imagining the lineup on my blank white wall in front of me. Comfort LA, we found them last year doing a pop-up, soul food pop-up. They use sustainable and organic ingredients to make soul food. And traditional soul food.
Which is not normally known
for sustainable. No, it's not. And their greens are so good. Oh my gosh. So they're one of my favorites. They're coming back, which I'm really excited about. Chomp Eatery. Have to have a little novelty. Rainbow Grilled Cheese.
Yeah, I was looking at that. I couldn't tell if that just looked good or tasted weird.
I couldn't tell you because... I have not had it.
It looks
but
like...
But we're going to find out.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen purple cheese, but I have to imagine that if you got white cheddar and just...
Wait, I have. There are a couple varieties. There is
I guess
a purple
there is
cheese.
Purple cheese.
Yes. I'm trying to remember what it's called. There is a purple cheese.
But maybe not that color of purple.
Probably not that shade of unicorn purple.
Yes.
There's a lot that's really... So there's a lot that's cool in that realm. Beyond just the mix of vendors and all the different sections... as you brought up, we are doing something a little bit new this year.
Yeah, you're bringing in chefs from Guadalajara, Mexico City. So what is the impetus behind that?
I'll tell you. In the past, we've had a number of chefs come from Baja, as well as from Mexico City. This year, one of our partners, we have great partners. My promotional partner this year is Nederlander, who I'm sure you've noticed. Mm-hmm. We are presented in association with and could not be happier with that.
Fantastic.
We have an awesome production partner, DLS Events, who do big things like Electric Daisy Carnival.
That's small music gathering
right?
in the desert.
Exactly. So they do big. They handle every event at the Wiltern, the Palladium, and so on. So really excited to have that level of infrastructure come into the event. And then my third partner is also functioning as our EP. He's been working in entertainment for many, many years, and he's done a number of events all over the world, including Mexico's Bicentennial. So, and he's lived in Mexico as a result. So with that, he came with just a lot of friends who they were like, is there a place for everybody? Like, people want to come up and just kind of have fun. So we looked at this and we're like, how can we really make it fun and create an experience again? So one of the new segments of the event is a gastro cervecería. And with that, we're bringing up a big group of chefs from Guadalajara, as well as a couple from Mexico City. And they're also coming in conjunction with a number of Mexican craft brewers that you don't typically see here in the States.
So not just Modelo.
No, not just Modelo. No, there's Cabotella, who we had last year, who is here now, Baja Brewing Company, but also Aguamala, Insurgente. I'm trying to remember the third. I cannot remember it, but I will. And I'll give it to you when I do.
Okay. And so what additional entertainment are you going to have?
So there's some fun little cheeky things. In the cheeky realm, we have our food porn cinema.
Yes. Can you explain what that is?
We could not help ourselves. I don't know that I can explain what it is, because even here at this stage, 5 days out, it's still taking shape and form. So
to see it is to believe it.
Yes, indeed. To see it is believe it, but we wanted to do it and have fun with it. We also have our live culinary stage, which I'm personally incredibly excited about.
Awesome.
Live culinary stage is actually anchored by what is called the Mobile Village Kitchen, which is being shared with us by our charity partner, Peace for Kids. They do a lot of work to create permanency for children and youth in the foster system.
Awesome.
Here locally in Los Angeles. And they do that here in particular through culinary skills and developing those skills, both for at home and, you know, some of their kids have gone on to culinary careers, which is really cool. So they have a custom-built massive rig that they call the Mobile Village Kitchen that we're bringing to the event and using as our stage, which is really exciting. So we'll be featuring everything from chef demos up there to some live podcast recordings.
Awesome.
Yes, hint, hint. You know, if you want to come into the mix, that could happen.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, hey, it's a Sunday.
We could absolutely We could absolutely come
by. It would be fun. And we'll also have some great DJs. We have Ann Litt from KCRW.
Love it.
Yeah. Betos, also from KCRW.
Amazing.
Some acoustic music. There'll definitely be some mariachi, because...
Of course, there has to be.
You have to have this.
Awesome. So if people want tickets, where can they go?
LAfoodfest.com.
Easy to remember.
Tickets are online at Eventbrite, but you can get there by going to LAfoodfest.com. I would say, you know, we haven't even talked about the other component of the event yet. In addition to what's happening with the food fest, we also have a separate pop-up restaurant where we're doing intimate long table dinners. So if you do want to have, you know, that more refined experience, or really, truly, it's just a more intimate experience. There are 250 people each. We're doing a kickoff party on Friday night, brunch, lunch, and dinner on Saturday and Sunday. And those tickets start at $95 and include admission to the market afterwards and access to the Rose Garden Lounge throughout the day. So if you want the pro tip, that's the best way to come and do that. That is the deal.
You can't see it.
You get a four-course meal.
There was a wink, but yeah, that's the deal.
There's a four-course meal with the likes of Walter Mansky, Margarita Mansky, you know, Yair Tayez from Mexico City cooking with Ray Garcia. We're doing a ladies theme with Naisha Arrington, Akasha Richmond, Teresa Montano. It's some phenomenal talent. Stephen Fretz is doing something to preview a new concept.
Awesome.
It's as strong of a lineup as I've seen at any other event. So I would say if you haven't checked that out, it's on the website. Tickets are available there as well at LAfoodfest.com. And if you want to find us on social, we are in the universe as LA Food Fest.
On the gram. How's your gram game?
Our gram game's pretty strong.
It's pretty good.
Like 65,000 strong?
That's
not
really
too shabby
that's
for events.
Very, very nice. Well, listen, I want to thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for, even though you're not doing it or owe anything to LA, LA appreciates the food festival.
We appreciate LA. Can't wait to see you there. Don't forget your stretchy pants.
Yes, stretchy pants and a hat. we have a song coming up from Dead Stars. From back in 2013, here live on Snacky Tunes.
Following program has been brought to you by Root 11 Potato Chips. From the moment Root 11 Potato Chips dropped their first batch of chips back in the early days of 1992, they understood their destiny as a high-quality producer. Instead of succumbing to the frenzy of mass production, they took advantage of their small size and made chipping a personal art form. The payoff was immediate, an incredible potato chip. With a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. In this world of uncertainty that we live in, Root 11 Potato Chips believes comfort food should be just that. Know where your food comes from. For more information, visit RT11.com.
All right. Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. I'm one half your host, Greg Bresnitz. And we have Maria's in studio. Welcome, all the way from Philadelphia.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming up.
Thanks for having us.
I was just down there recently for Thanksgiving with the family.
You're from right outside.
From right outside. Where in Philadelphia are you?
I live in Fishtown.
Okay.
I'm in Fishtown pretty much now.
Does everyone live in Fishtown?
Everyone.
Yeah.
The whole city.
The whole city.
Moved to Fishtown.
Sounds like, well, that was like how like everyone lives in Williamsburg. It's like there's other parts.
Yeah.
Well, they call Fishtown like a mini Williamsburg.
Do you remember
sometimes.
when they called Philadelphia the sixth borough and people like lost their shit?
Do you remember? I don't think Philadelphians were too happy about that.
Yeah, no. As someone who lived in New York and was a former Philadelphian, I was like, it's its own city.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So welcome to the show. Do you want to introduce yourselves?
Sure. My name's Mikkel. I play keyboards and sing lead vocals.
And my name is April, and I play guitar and I do harmonies with Mikkel.
And I like how you figured out a way to have like a common sounding name of a band, but make it totally Googleable, which is like really important in this day and age.
In this day and age it is, yeah.
Where does the name come from?
It's sort of named after my mom, actually. And her name is Maria, but spelled the normal way.
Okay. Yeah. Where did you come up with the spelling?
I think I was just playing around with different spellings of names that could sound like Maria, you know, depending on how you read it, but a lot of people do not read it as Maria, so
yeah. What have been like the more common pronunciations?
Myrias is a big one.
Myrias is a big one.
I guess like maybe from like myriad, it could.
Yeah,
you could see that.
No, I can see where it comes from.
They would be wrong.
Sure. They just went on.
They're just wrong.
When Mikkel went on tour recently, I think one of the opening bands, didn't they call us Myrias every night?
The band that we were on tour with
would call us Myrias every night.
Every night?
Every night, but the guitar player in the band was finally like, dude, you're saying the name wrong. This was our buddy's White Laces.
Yeah, we got a couple kids.
Hey, guys.
Who were like, hey, guys, what's up? Nothing. Kids. They can't hear us.
Oh, he waved. That's very sweet.
And April, you've been on before for the Downtown Club, which is awesome. So
yes.
Thanks for coming back.
No, I'm glad to, happy to be back.
One of the things that I like that you talk about your band is like the conflicting personalities within bands, or like the overlap of personalities. Mm-hmm. How does that work within your makeup?
I think right from the bat with this band, like from the start of this band, that we and I sort of wanted everyone's personalities to come through and not try to control it or make it one sound or one, you know, I wanted everyone to feel comfortable and let their personality shine because everyone has their strong suit, so.
And Mikkel wrote, these are all Mikkel's songs, except for a few covers that we do. But Mikkel, when she brought them to each of us, she never said, you play this part, this is the rhythm, you have to do it. Was, here's my music, what do you hear? And we would get together, there was four of us, four ladies, and just sort of jam on Mikkel's songs until it worked really well. I actually feel like what we have was very...
It came together pretty quickly.
Rare. Yeah, it was not, it was interesting, because...
But the idea of not telling other musicians what to play exactly is something that I wanted... In my previous band, it was a lot of like dictating what everyone played, and everything was pre-recorded, and you know, we recorded songs first and then we learned them as a band. And before that, I was in a band that was very much improvised, and we all played together and wrote songs together. So I kind of wanted to go back to that vibe more so than, you know, just telling everyone what their parts are.
I mean, a lot of music and art that comes from groups, like, come from the conflict that's created. So if you're super easygoing about people taking your original idea, like, do you feel that structure is still there, or is it just you kind of let go of things?
I think the basic structure is there, but also the way that I write songs, I don't know if the structure that I initially write them in is the best structure either. So I also really appreciate other musicians' input on the structure and the sounds that are going on in the song. And I think that it's, in the end, it becomes a better song than what I did by myself initially.
But there are some songs that we actually kept very to what Mikkel created, because they were very beautiful.
I guess it just depends.
It depends. Mm-hmm. I mean, each of us have very different backgrounds musically, but we're all very, I would say we're all sort of, not trained, but we've been doing it for so long that I think we were all just very respectful of what Mikkel created and wanted to, we really liked it and just wanted to, like, nobody wanted to
add
have an ego
to it,
and add
right.
to. It was more, this is beautiful music, let's create together.
All right, well,
I don't know.
Why don't we hear a song?
Okay.
What's the name of the first song you're going to play?
This one's called Unlock My Eyes.
Unlock My Eyes.
And how far away is this from the original idea?
This one is pretty close to the original idea. The original idea was just to have a drone of a song, basically, so you can only veer from it so much. sorry,
good. Did that scare you?
No.
Okay.
Maybe the kids out there got scared.
Thank you.
So when you started the project and started creating these songs, how far has the sound of the band evolved from when you started this project to where it is or to what we just heard?
Well, actually, it started, I was playing these songs solo, kind of similar to the setup with a drum machine beat and just a synthesizer and my own vocals. And then, so this setup right now is actually more similar to how it started. But once I brought in a full band, it definitely took on its own kind of dynamic with, you know, playing to a drum machine, you don't really have changes in volume so much, or changes in even tempo changes, or, you know, not going to happen. But yeah. Sorry, I just realized I was talking in the delayed vocal.
It's still good.
It's okay.
Yeah, I'm sure that sounded really awesome. Yeah.
Super dramatic explanation. Yeah. The history of
movies. Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know if you have anything to add, April.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, Mikkel and I, when we first, when this all started, it was her and I, and then it became four women, and then it became two women again, and then three. Like, it's had different ways of playing Mikkel's music, and it's worked in each way. Like, yeah, we just played a few shows where our bassist, Emily, who's not here tonight, she played along to the drum machine, which was very interesting, but had a pretty good outcome, which was, I don't know, no, I don't think bassists really like to play along to the drum machine.
Yeah.
I know,
did
Emily
feel natural
usually did it
for her at all. Yeah.
But she was a trooper and got through it, and it sounds, yeah.
And at what point do you feel like you ever reclaim the songs, or is it that the improvisation kind of takes its place and then you like finalize it and record it, or is it still like an ever evolving process?
I think once we get to a point that we're pretty happy with it, that's when we have recorded the songs, and we kind of try to stick to those recordings, and, you know, how we finalize them. I think that the way for me to kind of bring it back to my own is to be able to focus on the vocals more, and having, you know, that be kind of like my expression through the song.
Yeah, and always changing. I mean, I think with this, the way we're doing this right now as a duet is the where we can kind of play around a little bit more with sounds.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, I don't know. It's easier with two sometimes to.
Yeah, and then like as like in the other two band members, like the dynamic that they add to it, especially for the live show, like how would they affect that, or how do they affect that?
Especially replacing, well, both instruments are missing right now, so it's like the bass and the drums give it more kind of drive, and I think the songs are a little less droney, you know, with having the rhythm section there.
Yeah, like there are certain songs like we wouldn't even try playing
right,
as the two of us that right, we do with our drummer and with our bassist. I know, playing live has always been really lovely with this group. Their energy between the four of us was always really vibrant, and I actually feel like after we would play shows, usually people that would come up to us would say the same, that it was nice to watch a band that just felt very comfortable with what they were doing,
so,
and with each other, which is
as opposed to bands who seem like they're in direct conflict with each other.
Direct conflict with each other, or are putting on a show, which some people want to see that, you know, and that's not really what we do.
Can you explain that like a little bit further?
Going out to see a band, and you can obviously tell like the person who's playing for you is not an actor or an actress, but is somebody who's, I don't know how to explain it without making it sound like it's a,
well, I think there's a difference in a lot of live music and seeing bands, where some people have the intention and with the audience and the performer that they are there to kind of see a show and see, you know, they want to see people
perform
and dance around and play guitar licks
and move,
and then I think there's what we were just trying to create, something that felt really natural and that we really enjoyed doing
to do.
And I think that comes off a different way as an audience member, and for me as an audience member, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I think more than just seeing a performance,
more like walls down, kind of like, I mean, setting here versus like what we see here on, or what I see here, on radio is the same as we'd see in like a venue.
And like Mikhail, like it's funny when we do, like sometimes we'll play shows and yeah, some of the songs are long and droney, and like I know sometimes we'll go on and be like, is this going to be boring tonight? Like, are we going to, like, are people not going to be into this? Is this too slow? Is it too? And I've never felt like that. I've always felt that, I don't know, we're just very presently in the moment and not
trying to make it more than
it
is.
Not trying to make it more than it is. You know, it's, I don't know, it's nice. It's different. Obviously being on Downtown Club and you've met Travis and Dan, we're kind of putting on, it's a much whole, I guess that's the other opposite end of the spectrum that I'm thinking.
Why don't we hear another song?
Sure.
What are you going to play?
What are we playing?
All Alone.
All Alone?
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
are some of the Snacky Tunes listeners who are not as familiar with the Philadelphia scene, who are some of the bands that you love down there and some of the venues that you like playing in right now?
Well, I don't want to name any band. Sorry. Everyone's, you know, even bands that are have different sounds, we're all a really tight-knit community down there. So, I mean, I don't know who. Well, our bass player has another band called Louie Louie.
Yes.
That are really awesome.
They're up for a Celebrity Award.
Oh, my God. I forgot about Celebrity Awards.
So, Celebrity's happening on Wednesday at Johnny Frenda's.
Amazing.
And our Louie Louie is up, and so is Jesse's band's up for it, too.
Okay.
And, I don't know what's going on. Louie Louie is great.
Yeah, they're great. Spacin' are awesome. Like blanking. There's this younger band called Kississippi that are really adorable. Kississippi.
Kississippi. So yeah. Mississippi. Oh, Kississippi. Mississippi with the K.
That's pretty good.
They're really great though. There's this whole younger kind of scene that's coming up right now that, I mean, I don't even know like all the names of the bands or anything, but it's pretty exciting to see that the scene is continuing on, I think, in Philly.
And then there's older bands, too, like Quentin's band,
Light Heat,
which used to be Mazarin, and now he goes as Light Heat, and Drew Mills has a band now, A.M. Mills. So it's funny, all these guys that have been playing music in Philly for a long time are starting to be out and about again.
On their next iteration.
They're on their next,
They, like, had their children and now got married, and now they're back for more.
Exactly. They all live in Fishtown.
Yeah, everyone, well, obviously. Just Fishtown, just if you rearrange the letters, it just spells Philadelphia.
Pretty much. That's true.
And then I know you mentioned Johnny Brenda's, but any other venues as well. By the way, shout out to, I just saw Creed when I was home, and Johnny Brenda's is in it.
Right, yeah.
Oh, yeah, great. Yeah. I thought you were talking about the band.
No. I mean, it's an unfortunate thing because the movie is awesome, but every time I was like, I saw Creed, people were like, you did?
And then we're talking about the band.
Yeah,
Johnny Brenda's was really
They're
in
still
that a lot. I mean,
but as a venue, they're still a really great place. I mean, I guess the other venues that are around right now are like Boot and Saddle, and Ortlieb's is
Ortlieb's.
Around.
Oh my God, I used to go in there when I was underage and drink beer. When I was like 7 or 18.
Seven.
I thought you said
7 or 18.
Yeah, it's still going. It's
That venue has totally switched around how they have the stage. They have the stage set up in a different area, and they like transformed Ortlieb's. It's
sound
not the same.
Is really, it's not the same.
We just most recently played at Everybody Hits, and think we actually listened to Down Club's podcast on the way.
Oh, really?
We talked about Everybody Hits.
Oh, okay.
Which is they were talking about it, right?
A batting cage. And they actually have some really great shows there now.
It's, that's a cool place to play still. And
Philomoka.
We're playing in Philomoka.
Can you hear like the sound of the batting cage during the set?
No.
they have
it closed down. Like the batting cage part is kind of closed down while bands are playing.
Are there people who are just like bummed? They're like, come on.
Yeah. Now I have to watch this band.
Yeah. Ugh. And what's up next for you guys, you two?
Well, we have a show this coming Thursday at Philomoka with this band called Gun Outfit and a Philly band called Watery Love, who are another great Philly band. And then we just kind of finished up recording for a full-length album. So we have some plans to release that in the next year.
We recorded with Jeff Ziegler, who our Downtown Club's recorded with. And
great community.
Mikkel used to play in a band with. And it's a really,
That's amazing.
Cool community.
So we'll make sure we have time for one more song, but where can people find you, listen to your music, check you out,
swing
some bats with you?
Bandcamp has probably the most material on it, but we're on Facebook and SoundCloud also.
Mm-hmm.
Tumblr, actually.
Tumblr.
Great.
Does anybody use Tumblr anymore?
I think so. Maybe. I don't know. I think maybe they might not know that it's like a Tumblr template, but it's a anyway, without getting into it. But thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks for having
us. April, good to see you again.
Good to see
you
again.
I'm glad we made this work. And what's the name of the last song you're going to take us out with?
What are we going to play?
We could either do a cover, Nico cover, or we can do...
Oh, let's do a cover. Okay. I'd actually like to hear one of your covers.
Okay.
Since you teased it in the beginning of the episode.
Well, this has no drum machine to it, so this is a
That's fine.
This is as acoustic of a song that we can do with a synthesizer and an electric guitar.
It's like modern day acoustic.
Charlie was going to play tambourine on this, but since he has microphone duty.
I can hold the microphone if you have the tambourine. Okay.
Tambourine's in the
car. Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
You didn't even bring it in, did you?
All right. Well, thanks for being on the show.
Yeah. Thanks for having us. Sorry. If I'm not in tune, you'll be able to tell. Can you bring it up just a little higher? Thank you. Here we go.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.